night, while I was trying to sleep, I think it's my duty, I should read the envelope, the big envelope that the girls gave to me. So therefore, I read the abstract. And when I come across Richard Hamming's talk on the history of computer science, and he said, I quote, "The history of science is still mainly a dates and names history, and who did it and who did it first." And he go on to say, "The expert in the field usually prefers the classical form of history. That is, the dates, places, who did it first. While the outsiders prefers the culture history in one form or another." Then he go on to say, such and such may be culture history. Now, this morning, Professor Ray, referring to the history of science, he said a similar thing. As a matter of fact, Professor Ray went a little bit further, and he says the name and place is not history at all. I'm just sitting facetiously. Well, anyhow, one of my assets is not that I'm a good engineer, nor a good computer scientist. I think Arthur Bertrand agreed with me, so was Professor Brainerd. One of my assets, I'm very quick and good student. From last night reading this morning's lecture, I immediately decided my talk should divide into two parts. The part one is a culture history. I'm sorry, the part one should be classical history. Who did what, where, and first. The second part should be the culture history. I like to raise the question on human progress and the research. That is, the impact of research on science and technology, and research on social sciences, and how they impact the human progress. The second remark I want to make is, I just came from New York. Over there, the computer conference, I attended three sessions talking about the initiation of the ENIAC, the development of the ENIAC, and the technology transfer of the ENIAC. A while ago, you heard, or I heard, more about the ENIAC. I feel very interested, so interested like seeing the movie by the name of The Frankenstein is Born. Now, from now on, I think I have the privilege, John put me here, to kick off the sequel, The Wives, the Sons, and the Daughters of the Frankenstein. Of course, the daughter means the softwares. Now I give the first part of history in the classical sense. Very dull. In 1949, at Argonne National Laboratory, I think Associate Director Norman Hilberry, Frank Hoyt, the head of Theoretical Physics Department, and Donald, or better, Moore Flanders, head of Applied Mathematics Division, or department, or section, decided to have an IAS computer built as a laboratory to facilitate the computation related to reactor designs. Hermann Goldstein called me in New York and asked me to go to Argonne to build it. In those days, I think still is, I was a young man willing to go anywhere, any place to build computers. Never mind go to Argonne, Chicago. So therefore, I quickly accept the job and move my family to Argonne. So Avidac is the Argonne's version of the Institute Digital Automatic Computer. Was a name dreamed up, I think, no others but by Moore Flanders. It was nearly an exact copy of the IAS machine. The job of construction started in 1950 and completed in 1951. In 1950, Austin Householder of Oak Ridge also decided to have a machine built for Oak Ridge, its own use. Since Argonne has already started its own project, Householder decided to subcontract his work to Argonne by combining our talents and resources. Perhaps we can build a computer better and faster, both in time of time, in terms of time and speed. And I was the team leader. Immediately, I organized a team to do the initial development work and the system design before we launch into the real engineering design and construction. The team were Birch, Kramer, Jacobson, Flanders, Alexander, and Chu of Argonne. Burdett, Klein, Woody, Gerhardt, and Householder, and one more name I forgot, also mathematician of Argonne. And also I invite Arthur to join us. Arthur gratefully accepted. The brother of the ADVAC was named the Oracle. I believe the name was thought out by Householder and Burks. The overall system architecture was very much the same as the IAS machine, although we did make some improvement in the logical design. I think Arthur contributed a great deal to that. The engineering design was much different. We used a slightly faster circuits, and an electronic regulated power supply was used throughout. And 3-inch cathode tube was used, and a completely redundant checking also used. Then in addition, we added a 42-channel 2-inch magnetic tape to be used as a auxiliary memory. It was installed at Oak Ridge in October of 1973. It was completed in the summer of 73. Some of you may recall, during August of 1963, Argonne sponsored a symposium on computers. Many of you attended that symposium, and some of you were the speakers. I remember we talked about transistorized computers, magnetic core memory, mass storage, and mathematics and programming, which shows that the country and the people were ready to launch the computers into an industry. Then following 1973, since we can never really make AVIDAC working really reliably for Argonne, so Argonne decided to build another successor of AVIDAC, was called George. And this time they installed a 4,000 word magnetic core memory onto it. But quickly to add, the system architecture, again, is very, very much the same as IAS machine. I think this is part of my classical history. Now I'll get into a little bit on the cultural side. I feel for anyone who wish to write a good history, for example, I'm a specialist in early histories of Greece, since my friend there is a Greek, it would be very beneficial for one to know something about histories of other countries, maybe in addition to modern histories, because one, only through knowing the overall, one can go gain insight and perspective of that particular period in time. You know, I have the privilege of in a peculiar situation among you that I'm one of the few persons and lucky enough to be with you during the early years, and also lucky enough to be not with you during the later years. And that is the years when the industry took it over. So therefore, because of this experience, I like to say maybe the computer history as a whole can be divided into, say, five periods. The first period, the 4 years from 1942 to 46, we may call it the birth of the monster, which many of you made it possible, the fathers. From 46 to 1954, I shall call it the sons and daughters of the monster. That's the session we are getting into now. From the 8 years from 1954 to 1962, I shall call it the emerging of a new industry in the world. In the United States, they are, as you know, IBM, Honeywell, UNIVAC, CDC, Burroughs, NCR, RCA, and General Electric. The following 12 years, from 1962 to 1974, I call it the victors and the vanquished. Is as bloody as many things happen to you. I've been sitting with the board chairmen and president. I've seen how bloody it is and how dedicated they are, like you are, try to make this industry to be possible. Now, the 8 years from now looking into the future, that is from 1974 to 1982. I call it a new era, the era of computers, information appliance, a new term I'm introducing, and the newcomers. You may recall 10 years ago, 5 years ago, or as nearly as 4 years ago, 3 years ago, all the pundits predicted the computer industry is to be like the automobile industry. Among the giants, maybe the only three will survive. And we believe it. But right now, I think it's very clear that prediction is wrong. There'll be many, many newcomers. And computers is not going to be just computers as the way it is used now. A computer will be used as an appliance. That, in other words, this dream, this fantastic story, may be exaggerated, that a housewife will use computers to some degree, I think will be true in the ensuing years. During the 40s and 50s, not only us, we the engineers, mathematicians, and the scientist believed that the technology and computers will make a better society and better world. So was the US government and the people in this country. The rationale is very simple. If computers is an instrument which can expand our minds, our ideas, and transport our ideas and our minds, what better vehicle that we may ask to take us to a better civilization. Of course, during the intervening years, something happened, and sort of shake, you know, many people's faith. However, after 30 years, I myself, looking back, I still share the same opinion. Because the history has shown that individual freedom, better society, better political organization does not come from researchers in institutions and universities. But science and technology do come from research in university institutions. The social progress was only made by facing a particular challenge. And computers provide that challenge, I think, for us, for the people in the world, for many years to come. In conclusion, I wish to state categorically that if America will continually lead the world in computers, America will lead the world in technology, standard of living, equality, freedom, social science, and political form of government. Should America fail to do so, I cannot imagine the consequences. Now, this is my message. I wish you all to reflect upon it, especially National Science Foundation. Thank you very much.
We have 5 minutes for questions. Over here.
Fred Brooks, University of North Carolina.
Could you say a word about the significance indicators on the George? They seem to be relatively undocumented, and it seems to be a great idea that came and went. Perhaps a great idea.
Okay. The reason I sort of skipped, you know, over these hardwares, I saw that these hardware, after NEI, after EDVAC, after IAS, just simply another proof. Not Lindbergh only can fly across the Atlantic. An ordinary citizen always can do it. I think that's sufficient. That's why I skip over George. Now, the George, we made some modifications. If I'm wrong, someone correct me. First, it became a two-address machine and added tag. The tag allow one to make certain often happen modifications to the situation before one wish to execute a particular instruction. Now, second thing I mentioned is a ferrite core memory was purchased, installed, which at that time people think was more reliable than the cathode ray tube Williams tube memory. And thirdly, after the work with Oak Ridge, so on and so forth, the 2-inch magnetic auxiliary memory was made a little bit more reliable. And each reel composed of 200 feet of tapes, I believe, can store something like 250,000 words. And the machine was never really fully used because when 1958, 59 come along, the commercial computer already available. So George was built, was used in experimental way, was superseded very quickly by IBM's machines.